The Athletic FC Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm Taylor Payne. Welcome to Pod on the Time, your Storm, What Storm? Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic FC. I'm here with Jacob Whitehead. Jacob's here. Hello.
Hello. How's it going?
It's all right. How are you, dear boy? It's been a little while.
I'm good. I mean, we sort of missed quite a lot of the storm down in London. It sounded very exciting.
Oh,
up where you were.
My wheelie bins moved right to the end of the garden. It was unbelievable. Yeah. Powerful nature, isn't it?
Well, when you put it in those terms, yeah.
Yeah. Incredible. And George Colgan's here as well. George, you all right?
I'm okay. In terms of, you want me to do a bit of weather banter, thawed out from being at Kingston Park yesterday
nice.
To see the lasses win. And I'll give another shout out to our mate Josh from Philly, who we heard from in last week's pod, having gone to the men's matches. Now, he stayed in this country for a couple of weeks, went to see two men's games. He went to Sheffield United to watch the women play. He went to the under-21s in Gateshead.
Some commitment.
So we've seen Garang Quirl play football, and was then hung about to watch the women play yesterday as well, which is pretty extraordinary. He's now gone home, so I just want to wish him safe travels home. Been great to see him. We parted on a slightly sour note because he very kindly, I mean, absolutely no need, but said thank you to us, and he gave me a little present, which was two bags of kind of sour gummy worms, which is a reference to our
yes
live podcast and my mother's ill-fated appearance. So I
So if you don't know the context of that,
well, if you don't know the context of that, it's completely
George ate worms when he was a child, basically.
Childhood trauma. So he gave me those. But anyway, big shout out to Josh. It's been great having him around the place. Look forward to the next time he comes over.
If Carlsberg did Sundays, I mean, the afternoon with George, Newcastle women win, and Philadelphia Eagles make the Super Bowl. I mean, how much better can it get?
I don't know if Josh is a Philly sports fan. Well, that's, we don't know. We'll have to wait till we hear from him.
We'll find out.
He'll probably leave us 28 voice notes telling us about that.
Yes, thanks for that, Josh, and thank you for all the voice notes, and I hope you've had a safe journey home. Right then, Chris is obviously not here. He has been at various under-21s games as well, and there'll be more on that in future weeks. So the storm rattled through the UK. Travel difficulties were avoided by team and fans alike. Confidence was creeping back, George, shall we say?
Yes, and I think we just have to talk about that away form, don't we? I mean, to come away from Southampton, having won their fourth consecutive away match in the Premier League. That's the first time that's happened since October 1996, which is some going. And in fact, Newcastle have only done better than that once, and that was in 1994, and they won five away games in a row. Ipswich, Man U, Tottenham, Southampton, I suppose you can say that in context, in the way Newcastle have been playing, in the way those other teams have been playing, those feel like the right results. But I do think we have to recognise that that is a very, very fine sequence. And I think I'm right in saying that Newcastle have now bettered their away form than through the whole of last season. I'm sure I'll be contradicted if someone wants to contradict me, but I think that's about right. So you just have to say well done, don't you?
I mean, it's a really astonishing run, isn't it, Jacob? It gives Newcastle such a good platform going forward.
Yeah, just thinking back to this time last year with a number of questions there were all about.
Of course, yeah.
How Eddie Howe, I'm sure, actually in preparation for the game, I read Chris's article of why can't Newcastle win away, and the stats are absolutely damning. So for a year on, yeah, for them to have fixed that really is quite impressive. And I mean, it's not all been easy games. I mean, yes, this is Southampton away, but the rest of them, they've put in some really good performances.
They certainly have. However, confidence looked slightly shaky, didn't it, George, 5 minutes later, despite a bit of a positive start. They found themselves trailing after Jan Bednarek headed the Saints in front.
Yeah, and that was a good little test for them. I mean, they were on top. The goal did come against the run of play, but that goal was, yeah, I mean, it was pretty disastrous. Dan Byrne was hauled out of position. He was aiming to make a tackle on the left-hand side. The ball comes in, and because he wasn't there and wasn't being covered, it was a free header. And so, in fact, that was, you know, that was only the eighth goal they've scored at home in the Premier League this season. So it's not been, so, you know, the goal music has been in short supply.
Thank God.
Yeah, thank God. And so Newcastle had to regroup, but they did so. But yeah, I mean, you know, Bournemouth obviously was a test for their confidence, how they bounced back from that. And then there was another one within the game too.
And any reports of a surprise result were premature. Jacob Alexander-Isak, show why he is the in-form striker, maybe in the entire world at the moment. Absolutely superb from him.
Yeah, and I was just pretty transfixed by his movement. It was a desperately poor Southampton side, but he was just absolutely toying. Jan Bednarek had this moment with the goal, and after that he was just absolutely contorted for 70 minutes.
Twisted,
he was pulled deep, he was pulled wide, and every time he got pulled it left this huge gap in between the centre backs, and Newcastle just exploited that every time, whether it's Anthony Gordon, Sandro Tonali. I mean, Isak did lots of wonderful things with the ball at his feet, so there's the two goals, but he did just as much without it. I just also thought I should probably mention that lots of this was down to the midfield. Southampton were totally outgunned. I think they just had Joe Rebo and Leslie Gachuku in there. I mean, it was not the right formation from Southampton. Those two were just being swarmed by Newcastle's midfield all game. Like, I felt quite bad watching it back because I was kept picking out Aribo's name and was just name-checking him. But the man had to be four places at once. Yeah. I mean, it was barely his fault.
Bruno Guimaraes slotted that ball through for Isak George, and he went clear and was brought down. There's been a little bit of controversy about the penalty. Was it, wasn't it? I know the commentary on the the footage I was watching was absolutely convinced that it wasn't a penalty.
Really?
But I didn't think he got anything of the ball whatsoever.
No, I mean, I thought he hooked his foot in front of Isak and caught him on the and caught him and he went down. I couldn't understand why it took so long. It drove me mad that it took so long and they were looking at it for such a long time. But it was the right decision eventually. And yeah, I mean, I just thought, you know, I don't sort of tend to sort of deliberate on these things too much. I just thought that was a stonewall penalty. I don't know what Jacob thought.
I know we're used to talking about the likes of Mikel Arteta, but Ivan Juric in his post-match press conference just said, for me, it's a penalty. He shut down from Southampton. Yeah. So, case closed.
That's fair play. So he was in the box for the penalty and then an exquisite first touch to give Newcastle the lead after a great bit of work from Jacob Murphy as well. Jay, a beautiful through ball. Isak cushions it into his path and just slots it home off the post. It was a lovely goal.
That's the thing with Isak. There's all the stuff which you see, his dribbles past loads of players, how unerring his finishes is, but it's the small details he has in his game. One of them is that first touch, and by the way, we'll get onto the women's game later, but a similarly good touch from Shania Hales in their game. The other thing with Isak is just to go back to the penalty, just watching, I was really pleased that Shearer picked this out on a match of the day, just for a little movement to pull himself back onside and to find this pocket of space in this pretty messy penalty area was another one of those just sort of small details in this game which he's really added.
I can't even get too angry about the penalty itself, albeit I want to, because he did do that sort of hesitant run.
Yeah, he didn't twat it, did he, George?
He stopped and then completely
did
wrong-footed.
Did you see the little bit of analysis they did on it on Match of the Day when he's looking and then he looks down. And just before he strikes the ball, he has another little look. Just gives the keeper the eyebrows, doesn't he, and waits for him. And I think it's coolness, isn't it? That's all it is. It's stones. It's massive stones.
Yeah. The very, very contrived way I described it in our little briefing that we do, sort of the final whistle, was like a hop, skip and a jump start for Newcastle. But like, Newcastle needed a moment like that to get themselves back on track. And that was the penalty of a player just in the highest confidence. And when you're in that kind of form, those penalties do go in. And you can't complain. I would prefer a twatter always, but I just would. I'm just old school. Black boots and a twatter. That's what I want to see all
absolutely.
Day.
I have to pinch myself some weeks watching Alexander Isak, to be honest. He's one of those players that I look at and I think, I can't believe he plays for us.
Yeah,
I agree, my God, like, what an unbelievable talent he is. And you know, the way people are talking about him, he's up there with some of the best strikers in the world at the minute. How many moves have we all got? Isak has seven, apparently, Jacob.
Yeah. This was off the back of just enjoying that movement. And lots of strikers in the league have two or three techniques to to find space. Haaland's really good at playing off shoulder off the final defender or bullying his way into space with the ball. But Isak just got the ability to do it in pretty much every dimension. And that gives defenders such a difficult choice. So take, for example, the first half. He kept dropping deep and pulling out Bednarek, which created loads of space for Gordon and Tonali through the middle. But then the issue is that they can't just sit off him because you know his ability to dribble past, so which is why they've got to commit. At the same time, if he's dropping deep, they can't just move up their whole line because he's got the pace to get in behind, which you saw.
To spin in, yeah.
Which you saw for his goal. So you're sort of damned if you do and damned if you don't. And that just opens up stuff, not just for Isak, but for the whole team. So, yeah, I listed 7 different ways that he finds space in just 70 minutes. They're dropping deep, they're dropping wide. Dropping deep, dropping wide.
Didn't write them down,
Taking on players with the ball, the pick and roll, his nonchalance, and 2 more, which you'll have to read The Athletic to find out.
Oh, subscribers only for those.
Those 2 are behind the paywall, yeah.
Exactly.
When you talk about like an old school centre forward, an old school number 9, you would often say he's given defenders something to think about. And, you know, defenders would know that they were in a battle against players like that because they're physical and, you know, they have that kind of battle. Now, Isak gives defenders something to think about in every aspect. And that is the point that Jacob is making, that if you can't have a moment's peace against a player, then your concentration has to be full at all times. You can't, you know, you just can't switch off. And that's the point. If he goes wide, you can't just let him go wide. You can't just give him space out there because he can do something with the ball. You can't obviously give him space near the goal because he can finish. You know, there's no time or place that a defender can leave him alone. And he's got everything, hasn't he? And what you said at the start, Taylor, is absolutely spot on. He's just gorgeous to watch. He's got a bit of everything. He can dribble, he can cross, he can pass, he can hold the ball up, he can shoot from long range, he can nick one in. He's just an absolutely fluid, beautiful player to watch, just gliding around the pitch. Beautiful.
The thing which always comes back to me is, yes, you've got that beauty, you've got that grace, but one of his mentors, who played with him at ARK, was a guy called Henok Goitom, who's also from the Swedish Eritrean community. And he said, Alex, from day one he was in the first team, we knew he was sneaky. Not in a bad way, but he was sneaky. And just the way he sniffs out those opportunities now,
yeah,
the unsexy side of the game, is what's leading to this explosion, I think, as well.
He's added those goals, hasn't he, George, that we spoke about a lot of times last season, the unsexy, the tap-ins, the scruffy goals. He's added those to his game, as well as the beautiful goals and as well as the taking players on, smashing it in from 20 yards. Those little knotted goals from 2 yards out, he's picking them up now, and that's why he scored so many this season.
That was the thing that Howe wanted to get out of him. So when Alan Shearer interviewed Isak for The Athletic, when we were doing that interview, and kind of going through clips with Alan and Alex and sort of looking back at those goals, Hal came in. He came in to say hello to Shearer, who was at the training ground, and they had a little chat, which was very nice. And there was that quite pointed remark, Alex has got to score more of those goals. And that has been, you know, I thought that was sort of quite interesting, quite an interesting sort of just tiny little bit of management that we saw. Him saying that in front of Newcastle's greatest goal scorer of all time.
Yeah.
And he has added that to his game. And, you know, he looks really, really hungry to score now, which is just brilliant to see. And anybody would want Alexander Isak in their team in this kind of form. But this is the form that he's shown now for a couple of seasons. But they can get their eyes off and their hands off, can't they? Because he's ours.
Absolutely. We also saw the wonderful serenading of Miguel Almiron at full time, with his move back to Atlanta seemingly confirmed now. He's had some magnificent moments in black and white over the years, and he's always put a shift in, Jacob. He'll be a miss, I think. Fans have got a soft spot for Miggy.
I've got a bit of a soft spot for him, but I am not a fan. Because he's the first player I properly wrote about when I was on the Newcastle beat. I was looking at his similarity to the European eel, lest we forget. He's always been fun to watch. I mean, he's had so many significant moments, especially in that Champions League season, whether it was his run of goals and the year after, his opener against PSG. Obviously, the last 12 months have not been his best at Newcastle, but he's been utterly tireless. He's a massive part, I think, especially early on when Howe was trying to impress the work ethic he wanted for his forwards. Almiron was the absolute model of that. out of possession. And though other players might have kicked on and produced more with the ball, he had a really important role in the formation of Newcastle's identity early on.
Yeah, totally agree with that. I'd like to pay tribute to, obviously, you know, he's been at Newcastle for a long time, for 6 years now. So he's sort of straddled three eras, really, because he arrived under Rafa Benitez. And for those,
that's right,
the last few months of Rafa, Newcastle had a really good team, and he was really part of it. Him and Rondon, you know, up front, was really sort of promising at a time when hope was sort of slowly drifting away from, you know, from Newcastle in terms of a future under Rafa. The team looked really kind of balanced at last. And under managers like Rafa and Eddie Howe, who have known, you know, they've recognised that he might have some limitations as a player, but if you can channel his running, if you can make his running specific, you've got a really good, got a really decent player there. Someone who will always trouble defenders because, you know, they hate having to defend against raw pace, and he had that in abundance. And yeah, when that running was channeled, when he was being asked to do specific things, he was a really, really fine player indeed. As Jacob points out, in the fourth place season, he was pivotal, and of course, you know, that fantastic smile of his. Yeah, we wish he'd scored and made a few more goals, but he's been a really important part of the team, the club. I wish
he has.
This is a very journalistic sort of point to make, so I sort of apologise for it in some ways. He's never spoken. I mean, so all the way through his time here, he's always kind of said that his English isn't good enough to speak after matches. So I feel in some ways it's like he leaves almost like a bit of a ghost. I couldn't tell you what his favourite food was, or, you know, or I've never been able to ask him a question after a match.
That's a very waff-like want.
That was a very strange thing to say, and I don't know why that came into my head. Maybe I'm just missing a bit of sausage banter. I don't know. But I don't feel like, you know, I don't feel like we necessarily know him.
If you want to know him a bit better, there's a very good video on the Newcastle United YouTube channel of him and Anthony Gordon having a cook-off against each other, which was adjudicated by Bruno Guimaraes for some reason. I have no idea why that happened.
Well, there you go. Probably said what his favourite food was.
It's quite a nice little video.
Yeah, I've seen stuff like that and like it. And obviously, you know, he's very popular around the dressing room, and you know, and that's great. And I'm not making a complaint. I'm just sort of saying I wish I'd had a chance to sort of speak to him and, you know, get to know him, even in that just very kind of brief, fleeting way that you sometimes get after matches.
Yeah.
It'd be brilliant if he just does an exit interview in perfect sort of...
I just want to see it. I just want to see it. All the lads and lasses, I'm absolutely devastated. Be leaving St. James Park.
Julio Jordio.
Keep an eye out, by the way, end of this week, I'm doing a piece with Stu James on The Athletic about footballers learning languages, the importance of it. It might touch a bit on Tonali. Amarin's obviously an example, not wanting to do an interview, but if you fancy a deep dive into this, keep an eye out.
I'd eat orchid.
Almiron's departure may leave us a little short at right wing, but in Jacob Murphy, George, we've got someone who's as close to the top of their game as it's possible to be at the moment. He's now the seventh most prolific assister of goals in Newcastle's Premier League history, and they've come at a rate that matches, and this is only by our crude assessment, everyone bar Laurent Robert. He's absolutely on fire, isn't he?
Well, if we're doing plugs for our own pieces, you'll remember my little love letter to Jacob Murphy from a couple of weeks ago, the Jacob Murphy Appreciation Society.
Yes.
Yeah, and he, in those terms, those stats speak for themselves. I mean, you know, who do you think of? If you're talking about the Premier League, the kind of assist makers and goal scorers, well, maybe it's De Bruyne and Haaland. Maybe that's what kind of springs to...
Mo Salah, yeah.
Yeah, and to have Jacob Murphy's name there is fantastic. He has had a great season. That is the reason, ultimately, why Miggy Almiron has not been able to get in the team. Almiron has started one game this season in the Premier League. Yes, everyone knows that Newcastle have been looking for recruits in that position, and that earlier on in the season the manager tried lots of sort of different experiments, but Murphy has made that position his own. you know, again, he's another player that straddles eras. Again, arrived under Rafa, was someone who, you know, Rafa sort of said, we're signing the players that we can, not necessarily the players that we want. And that was that wasn't exactly the sort of greatest welcome to Newcastle, but that was where Newcastle were at that point in his history. It's been a very slow burn for him in lots of ways. He's been very, very important over the years since the takeover under Howe. But yeah, since Isak has been around, those stats are absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, fair play to him. You know, love his attitude and his application. And it's just working. It's working brilliantly. That ball to Isak at Southampton was just fabulous. Yeah. And it's not the first time it's happened. It's happening regularly. And I thought it was great that Isak's first gesture is to turn around, is to point at Murphy, does it once and then does it again and they embrace. It's working really, really well. It's a great partnership.
Yeah, Murphy to Isak is the most goal-tastic combination in the Premier League this season, a route that has provided 8 goals. We've spoke about Isak's touch for that second goal, and that was magnificent. But as George has just said, Jacob, that slide rule ball by Murphy, and not just the ball, but the little touch just before the ball, which takes it past the defender. A little bit of ingenuity, a bit of something different to lift the ball over the defender.
Bit bizarre.
Yeah, it just wasn't a normal thing that you see players do, but he did it, and then he plays that ball beautifully through.
Well, yeah, to be honest, usually you think of Murphy as more of a chalk on your boots type winger. That's how he's got most of his service to Isak, has been getting to the byline and putting a cross in. This was very different. This was moving inside, and there's a beautiful reverse angle of that slide rule pass where you just see it fizz off his boot, which I don't think you quite appreciate.
I thought he'd overhit it. I thought he'd initially overhit it when I saw it. I thought he's hit that far too hard. He's not going to be able to control that, but it was perfect.
Streets won't forget Jacob Murphy, 24-25.
That is definitely true. And we should say, talking about Isak and talking also about that away form, I think Isak is the first Newcastle player to score in 5 consecutive away games in the Premier League. And amazingly, and feels amazing to me because it doesn't feel like he's been around for all that long. He's now scored 48 Premier League goals. And that means that only Shearer has scored more for Newcastle in the Premier League with 148. So he's overtaken Callum Wilson, who's been here for quite a while longer, albeit
astonishing, isn't it?
Albeit not available for some of them. And I just want to confirm what I said earlier on the pod, that Newcastle's away form is now already better than last season. It is by a point. So I've checked that while we were chatting. So yeah, and you know, those two things go hand in hand. If you've got a striker like Alexander Isak who can score week in, week out, it certainly makes your task of winning away that bit more straightforward.
Speaking of Jacob Murphy, the rest of his game has improved as well, and he nearly scored a beautiful curler into the far left-hand corner when cutting inside, Jacob. I couldn't tell if the keeper got a touch on it or not, but it's smacked against the foot of the post.
And I've got eye, to be honest. I mean, I was typing. I didn't think it was particularly dangerous. And then all of a sudden, you just hear whack off a post. What have you done, Jacob?
He likes that, though, doesn't he? He loves a cut-in and a hit. And he, I like that he has shots when he gets the chance, you know?
He has a high ratio of spectacular goals, it feels.
Absolutely. Isak and Murphy, lethal then, but Jacob used the word clinical in his assessment of that third goal and summed up that element of the performance. A tactical fallibility identified and exposed with ruthless efficiency.
Yeah, I mean, Southampton were playing 3 centre-backs and I still don't know how they managed to create the spaces they did between them. I mean, Bednarek was all over the place. He was following Isak like they were attached with a sort of 10-foot rope because he didn't really get that much closer. In the first half, actually, it was really interesting because Newcastle nearly spun the exact same trap. Isak dropped deep and Cher hit a really nice pass through.
Yes.
And Gordon was just offside. If he delayed his run another second, he was clean through in about the same amount of space as Tonali was. Second half, very similar. Lob ball to Isak. This time he flicks it onto Gordon, who plays the pass through the middle. Bednarek had followed Isak, and there's just about 30 metres. I mean, I'm not quite sure how in the Premier League you can have that much space for a player with what is ultimately a pretty simple third man run. But Newcastle saw it, very ruthless, and Tonali's finish was very nice. Just sort of looked to the far side and then just whipped it down around the inside of the post. His first Premier League goal, I believe, since his very first game for Newcastle.
Since the Villa game, yeah.
Although obviously he did score in the cup.
I mean, we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about him, but he was he was sensational. I mean, he's being I mean, more or less sensational week in, week out now. So you sort of take it for granted. I thought he was excellent again.
How concerned are we, George, about that slight wobble at centre back? Recent personnel shuffles probably haven't helped us.
I mean, I wouldn't say I was concerned because I think it's been such a source of strength in recent weeks. They've looked incredibly solid. You have a game like Bournemouth and it is a faith shaker. What was interesting at Southampton was that it did mean that there was a kind of a big selection decision to take, arguably for the first time since Brentford away, because more or less, I mean, apart from the odd fitness or suspension, it's been kind of the same first 11, more or less, that's taken Newcastle through. Howe did not ring the changes after Bournemouth. He, again, went with pretty much the same lineup. But the one decision he did take was to rest Sven Botman, put him on the bench, and go back to the Dan Burn, Fabian Scher centre-half pairing, which has served Newcastle very, very well. And I think that's fair enough. I mean, I'm saying rested because Botman had a tough time against Bournemouth, but you could have made a lot of changes after that game if you're just taking that, you know, if you're taking that in isolation. And Botman is still working his way back after 10 months out. It takes any player, however, I mean, he came into the team and, you know, it was pretty astonishing for him to play the way that he did, and then stayed in the team. And I think he probably did need a rest. It'll be interesting to see what happens, you know, going forward. Someone as good as Botman will be pushing straight away to get back into the team. That combination of Botman and Byrne worked pretty well. The two left-sided centre-halves, which you don't see very often, until we got to Bournemouth. Not that Newcastle looked any better when Scher came on. So, yeah, I mean, I think not concerned. I wouldn't say I was concerned. Yes, there was a wobble or two, but I am interested to see what happens, you know, moving forward.
I love the names Botman and Byrne as a combination. It sounds like an apothecary or something.
But a firmer solicitor, small town solicitors, Botman and Byrne, personal injury specialists. Yeah, Fabian Scher, he dodged a header, didn't he? And then he dodged a bullet as Matheus Fernandes ghosted in to score, but was then rightly flagged offside after a fairly lengthy VAR check, Jacob. Got away with that one.
Yeah, it is fortunate. It was a pretty big mistake, which could have made the final 10 minutes very, very awkward for Newcastle. And ultimately it was luck which saved him. It wasn't sort of a great defence. It wasn't sort of like he was playing a great offside trap. It was Matheus Fernandes's knee was just slightly too offside.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen. It's gone with the wind. And Scher did have some good moments. His distribution was really, really good because you don't necessarily want to play Botman and Byrne together with them both being left-sided. And Scher just provides that balance.
It's perhaps slightly easy to underestimate this result, George. Southampton have been firmly attached to the bottom, but they've played okay under Juric so far. And a win of any form was big this weekend, wasn't it?
Well, it was, yeah. And I thought it was a really good test because, as I say, Bournemouth was a faith shaker. You win 9 games in a row, suddenly you look tired, you look mentally tired, you look physically tired. Bournemouth was superb. Shouldn't forget that. Seen their result, by the way, against Forest at the weekend. I mean, astonishing. Fair play to them. And, you know, perhaps that puts a little bit more perspective into that result too. But yeah, that was a big test. Southampton have got 6 points this season. They've been hopeless, you know, in terms of points and in terms of results. And if Newcastle are the good team or were the good team that we think they are, they go to Southampton and they win.
Yeah.
That is the test. You know, you go there with minimum of fuss, you come back and you've won. And those were the messages that I was told, you know, that were being relayed at the training ground last week, that this was seen as not a defining test, but as a really good test. Earlier this season, what were Newcastle? Well, they were capable of really good stuff. They were capable of some pretty terrible stuff. They were very, very inconsistent. They bounced between results. You've then had this 9-game winning run. Nobody wins forever, and it's about what you do afterwards. And so, to me, that is a sign that Newcastle are a good team. I mean, it stands to reason when you see their position in the table and, you know, in the semi-final of the League Cup, blah, blah, blah. But to me, it was an important test that they passed, and that should, you know, it should leave them, yeah, okay, maybe that was a sort of expected result, if you like, but I think it was really important. And I think we can all look at them now and judge them on these 10 wins and 11 matches and say this is the standard they set themselves. They've righted things after Bournemouth. They're a good side. They've shown it, and now the challenge is to carry on in this vein of form for the rest of the season.
Yes, absolutely. Fulham at St James's Park, our next Premier League fixture coming up on Saturday. And they were, let's be honest, unlucky to lose against Man United on Sunday night. But they did look a little lacklustre, early season solidity, just drifting into inconsistency, Jacob.
Yeah, they were unlucky. Am I allowed to do the little pessimistic Chris Woff feature here?
Go for it.
That I think that they aren't a great matchup for Newcastle in the sense that they have a really physical midfield who are able to go toe-to-toe with Newcastle's. In Anthony Robinson, they've got a fullback who's really good at putting crosses into the box, which is a slight weakness of Newcastle's back four and is sometimes their aerial ability. And also Adama Traore under wing taking on one-on-one means that Newcastle's high line is a little bit more vulnerable. Hopefully that's not sort of a knell of doom, but I just think this one will be a particularly tough matchup. Yeah, sort of quality-wise.
Yes, it should be a challenge. Right then, chaps, let's have a quick break and we'll be back in a moment to talk about the lasses.
We can beat you and we are going to win.
So both of our senior teams were playing the side cut adrift at the bottom of their respective leagues, and the lasses came out on top in a thrilling 5-goal encounter with Portsmouth. Shania Hale's on target twice for a 2-0 lead, but Newcastle concede twice in 3 second-half minutes, George.
Yes, it feels like, well, it doesn't feel like it's been ages since I've been there. It was ages since I've been there. That very strange sort of Christmas break, and then the way fixtures have fallen. It's ages since I've seen them. And
was it a cold one by any chance? Was it a cold one?
Oh, it was
one?
Freezing. Yeah,
where
was it freezing.
Where was your heated court?
Well, as you know, I had to bring it in to Chris, and he's kept it. So having made a mockery of me for my heated paraphernalia, he has then kept it for himself.
Yes, he has.
So pretty astonishing behaviour, really. Really, he's not here to defend himself, which just means we should hammer him more, in my opinion. So yes, I was definitely regretting not having that. It was great to be there. And yeah, 2-0 up, you sort of think this is normal service resumed. They were very good value for it, arguably hadn't taken their chances. And then suddenly things change. And it was very frustrating when the first Portsmouth goal went in, which was a beautiful free kick. You just knew that another one was coming. You could just feel it. Everyone could feel it, and it did come. And, yeah, they made life really hard work for themselves. I mean, you say thrilling. It was, but it was also irritating in lots of ways. They got through it, yeah. And, you know, quite rightly, it would have been an absolute travesty if they didn't. But they didn't half make life hard work for themselves.
20 minutes to go, all square. A good response from Newcastle, but an element of fortune for Stokes' winner, Jacob.
Yeah, big deflection on the shot, but I guess you make your own luck, and brilliant feat from Joel to just set up the opportunity. Ultimately, if you play in the right areas of the pitch enough, you have that dominance of the ball, you have enough effort, sometimes those go your way, just as sometimes a goal-bound shot is blocked, sometimes it nips in.
Becky Langley not mad chuffed with conceding set pieces, defending them. And despite Hale's score and form, the boss wants more goals from the team in what may be the most competitive division in English football.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a good point, because I think there's a lot of front runners, isn't there, in WSL? The likes of City, Chelsea, Arsenal, you know, you expect them to win every weekend. But I think in this division, yeah, anyone can take points of anyone. So I think, you know, like, if we win our game in hand, which we should, when we win that game in hand, you know, we're literally a point off the top again. So there's lots of teams in the mix. There's lots of quality teams in the mix and ones with a lot of experience as well. You know, I know we've got more resources potentially than some teams, but at the same time, these teams have got 10 years plus experience at the level.
What will be the difference, do you think, this season?
I think it's consistency, and like, we've been, you know, the draws have killed us. Like, there's such tight margins. Like, when we drew with Charlton here, it's a big 2 points lost. It's a big 2 points lost last weekend against Sheffield. But it's just all about consistency, and, you know, quality players coming in will help this group, and we haven't scored enough goals. I think we've conceded the second least amount of goals in the division, second to Birmingham, but we haven't scored enough. We're one of the lower scorers in the league, so in terms of that, we need to make sure we're clinical in front of goal, and I'm happy Shania's, you know, got off 2025 with two goals today.
So you need to share those around a bit then?
Definitely, yeah, of course. I think, like, we want more goals to come from midfield, we want others to be contributing, so yeah.
I think that was kind of a fascinating point. Newcastle are seventh of 11 teams in the Championship, which doesn't sound great until you then say that they're only 4 points
off top
with a game in hand, which is absolutely astonishing. It's a mad, mad, mad division, and it is still there for them. But they are going to have to improve, certainly on that, you know, certainly on that display at the weekend, and also in terms of the result at Sheffield United. Those points, you know, those points could be really crucial. And they're seventh, and as Becky says, in terms of goals scored, I mean, it's mad to say this after a 3-2 victory, but nobody above them has scored fewer goals than Newcastle. So that is something that they have to look at. And I also spoke to Shania Hills along with other reporters afterwards, and I talked to her about the difference. I thought she was quite spiky, actually, in what she said afterwards.
Yeah, I think we won't write ourselves out until mathematically it's not possible, but I think we all know that performances have to be better. Like today, we win, but like I'm happy, but I still want a good performance at the end of the day. Like we have a lot of ability in the group, so to scrape points against like bottom place, it's not ideal, but a win's a win, points are points. But going forward, like when we're coming up against Southampton, like Birmingham, London City, Bristol, they're going to be big games where we need better performances. So for me, we have to look at that side of it. We will this week. So hopefully going to Southampton, we can win with a solid performance.
Yes, an exciting game, but George was perhaps just as excited about having a pint. Music fans, brace yourselves.
So I'm in the main stand at Kingston Park. There's a disco. You can hear the sound, the beautiful sound of the Macarena playing behind me. There's a merchandise stall selling Newcastle gear. And the bars are doing a brisk trade. I bought myself a pint of Guinness. I'm here with Charlotte Robson, a friend of the podcast, True Faith. And in your lifetime, did you know that you've never been allowed to buy a drink and consume that drink in sight of a football pitch?
You can if it's a rugby game on the football pitch.
Yeah, that really annoys me. I've been to St James's when the Falcons have been playing there. It irritated me so much that people were drinking, you can't do it with football. We're treated differently, aren't we?
We are. We don't wear jeans and shoes, and that really upsets the people who play.
Or yellow trousers.
Or yellow trousers. No disrespect, you should wear yellow trousers. Colour is great. But, it's never really annoyed me because... Actually, it has at away games. When I used to go to away games, right when I started, I used to drink a lot more. And it was really frustrating having to, like, dive to the bar at half-time, neck your drink, and then go back out. Obviously, you don't have to do that, but I think it would be much more sociable. And probably you would drink less quickly if you could just take your pint out into the sun.
Yeah, so on this day of freedom, personal freedom for Newcastle United fans, for football fans in general, what lovely drink have you got yourself?
I've got myself here a pint of Diet Coke.
Right. So I should put that in context. What I actually tried to do from the match was do several recordings, because Newcastle are part of a pilot scheme in the Championship. There's a few teams in the Championship doing it where you are allowed to buy alcohol and consume it whilst watching the game. Now, you've not been allowed to do that in the men's game since 1985 in the top five divisions. And that was, you know, basically since 1985, that was a response to hooliganism. But, you know, at a time when football was very, very different. Stadiums were, you know, crumbling and falling apart and dangerous and dirty. And it was difficult to be a football fan. There was that threat of violence. And so people weren't allowed to drink in sight of the pitch whilst games were going on. Now, increasingly, that feels anachronistic to me. Stadiums are very safe. They're very secure. They're family orientated. Yes, some people still drink. And yes, of course, there are kind of away fans there, but really, is that, you know, and to certain clubs lower down the divisions, that would be, you know, useful revenue.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of vaguely interesting. So I bought myself a pint of Guinness. I have to say it was way too cold to drink it, but I stood in the south stand and there were quite a few people drinking. So I thought I'd try and do a little feature. Unfortunately, most of my recordings, a bit like this spiel I've just been on, were so dull that they didn't make the cut, but Charlotte was funny, so that was fine. But yeah, I thought that was vaguely interesting, and that's going to carry on at Newcastle this season. I did see quite a few people having a pint. Why not? It's a family. Yeah. It's a very, very family vibe, and you know, it's great. It's, you know, there are some away fans who come up. There are a few hardy Portsmouth fans who made the journey. Fair play to them. It's all very, very good natured. It's a really nice atmosphere. Why not? Why not? You know, watch the match and have a pint if that's what you want to do.
Absolutely. It sounded like you recorded that little clip in Kingston Park Butlins as well, George. That's what it...
Yeah, the Maracana.
The vibe I was getting.
Maracana was... it's a while since I've heard that, and I really hope it's a while until I hear it again.
Absolutely.
Have you ever done the Macarena? I can just imagine you saying the word demeaning, embarrassing. Have you ever done it?
Oh, you occasionally on your grouse shoots, George. Surely you do the occasional Macarena.
You're wearing my yellow trousers whilst watching a bit of rugby union. No, I can't imagine that there would be a circumstance where I've done or would do the Macarena. No, I'm a man.
I bet Chris has done it.
Chris would have, yeah, because he's got no dignity. I'm very much of the school of thought that you should never run. I would never run for a bus because I don't want to make myself look like an idiot and by missing the bus. So I would never run for a bus, even if the bus is 10 yards in front of me and it's at a stop and there's someone getting on it. I would prefer to miss it than run and have a 1% chance of missing it.
When have you got the bus? More recently than the Macarena?
Well, admittedly, in this analogy, bus would be what? What would bus be? A Rolls Royce, which I'd hired. I mean, no, I get the bus all the time.
Sure you do.
Never
sure
ever you do. Run for a bus. There's nothing more stupid than a man chasing his own hat. That's a line from a film, which I can't remember, but I would also agree with that.
Anyway, let's move on, chaps. It's all got a little bit.
All right,
it's all
must,
got a little
yeah.
bit psychedelic for me. This, let's go.
Okay.
Happy, I'm happy. I'm going to get me suit measured.
Right then, we won't be back with you until after the second leg of the Carabao Cup semi-final. And the only thing that I can think to say at this point, George, is please, please, please don't let them be as good as Bournemouth.
Yes, I think the closer we get to this match, the narrower that 2-0 feels, doesn't it? I mean, that's certainly how it feels to me. Yeah. And the cliche is something that we have written about on The Athletic is about the danger of a 2-0 lead. That is the cliche, that a 2-0 lead is dangerous. And, I don't really want to think about that too much yet. Yeah, I am nervous. What I will relay is a very quick story. Met a friend of the family, guy who's 84 this year, I think, and had seen Newcastle win at Wembley when he was 14 in the 1955 FA Cup final. So he knows what it's like to win something at Newcastle, so quite rare in that respect. And we were talking about the semi, and he said, well, obviously I hope we win. And he said, God, I hope we get Liverpool in the final. And I went, what? What are you on about? Liverpool in the final? Why would you say that? He said, I just couldn't bear losing to Spurs. I just thought that was perfect. I thought that was one of the most perfect Newcastle things I've ever heard.
It's just drenched in cynicism, isn't it?
It's just drenched in... And then he relayed all the stories about him going to Wembley since 1955 and, of course, not seeing Newcastle win. But, yeah. Yeah, I'm feeling a bit nervy, Taylor. How about you?
Yes, I'm feeling slightly nervous about it as well. Like you say, 2-0 is not exactly concrete, is it? And it depends which Arsenal turn up. And obviously, it depends which Newcastle turn up as well. And we don't want to be sitting back from the first minute. I think if we kind of, you know, if you think of it as a 2-0 lead at half-time, I think you might be getting yourself in trouble by doing that. You could sort of invite Arsenal on a bit too much in that first half, and before you know it, you're in for a right scrap. So I don't know. It's going to be a tricky one, isn't it? But we'll see how they start and we'll see how we go. Our Thursday broadcast also means that the transfer window will have closed, and this is Woff's specialist subject, obviously. However, he's not here, so despite Almiron's departure, are we still no closer to any incomings, George?
Well, no, the mood music for weeks now has been that incomings are very unlikely in this window. And, you know, unless kind of everybody at the club, whether it's kind of around the first team or recruitment, are being incredibly clever with what they say, that remains the case. One thing we didn't talk about, Miggy, is that, you know, he's 31 next month, a fee of around £10 million for someone who's only started one Premier League game this season probably makes sense. You know, one of the real thoughts, philosophies going into this window with Newcastle on this fantastic run has been that they don't want to disrupt the first team. Hence, Dubravka staying in spite of him kind of waving goodbye at one point. He's still here, and that was seen as very important. Now, it is a risk because if you lose any player, if Jacob Murphy got injured, for example, then Newcastle would be very, very short. Yeah. But they have to trade. And so, no, sorry, I've danced around that subject. Not on purpose, but no, very much the feeling. And I mean, while they've kind of kept options open and sort of said if there was something to be done, they could possibly look at it, but it would mean more players having to leave before the June 30th deadline. So, as things stand, we're not expecting anything. Nothing is imminent, that's for certain.
Sort of shut the door, but left the key in the lock. We aren't, but, oh, there's a chance, but no.
Yeah, I feel slightly more negative than that.
The door is shut. It's just not...
It's just not...
He hasn't bolted it and put the alarm on yet, has he?
Yeah.
No, the alarm's not on.
No players in three windows, Jacob. This is a part of a concerted effort, though, isn't it, to get on the right side of PSR calculations so we can pursue those prime targets further down the line.
Yeah, and I see why it's frustrating for supporters. I mean, it felt like just as Newcastle were ascending, they'd made loads of really exciting transfers in the windows before that. It does stall, and understandably, I mean, Howe spoken about how he always wants a new player every window for the freshness of the squad and to keep that new. And he's not had that for three windows.
Yeah.
It's all been long-term thinking over short-term thinking. Newcastle weren't where they wanted to be PSR-wise, and they realised that quite late in the day. And that's affected the last two windows. In theory, big splurge next summer, but...
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, it's funny how sort of time changes the way you look at things. I mean, I was very kind of discomforted after the summer window, which had been uncomfortable for Newcastle for lots and lots of reasons. We don't have to go back through all of that. But, you know, not strengthening the first 11 for two successive windows at a team and a club that is, you know, targeting Europe just felt like... It felt wrong. And, you know, not the behaviour of a big club. Totally understand the PSR restrictions and so on and so forth, and that it had put, you know, in some ways too much pressure on Eddie Howe and his team. Now, how have Newcastle got through those difficult moments? Well, it's been Eddie Howe and the team that have done it. They've done it themselves. They haven't done it with any other additions. They're second now, I think, on the list of lack of injuries. So that's, you know, that's good, but that's a bit of fortune. And it would be such a shame if the platform that they've given themselves, they're not able to leap forward from this and stay in a European position because of those financial reasons. You know, can you make the argument that a year ago, 2 years ago, Newcastle would have taken a risk at this point and said, OK, we'll make a signing now, we'll try and get back into the Champions League and then... you know, deal with the ramifications somewhere down the line. Well, yeah, they probably would have. We saw how close they sailed to the wind, though, last June. And so I think there is a feeling at the club that that has to be the priority. But having said that, I just hope that, you know, if they don't sign somebody and results become a bit tricky in the second half of the season, that we do understand the context for what's happened.
We mentioned before, George, those prime targets as well that the club have. Was one of those prime targets Man City's new centre-half, Abdou Kadir Kuzunov?
Well, yeah, it was. And that is interesting. So it feels now I'm going to slightly row back from what I've just said. But I think one of the reasons why Man City have done that and have got him, have signed him, is because Newcastle were quite a long way down the line. Now, Paul Mitchell is someone who knows the French league very well. He's got ins there. And I think Newcastle thought that they were in prime position to sign him. Now, my assumption with something like that would be that either that would be something for the summer, or that it would have been a loan with an obligation to buy, which is something that Newcastle have done before with Lewis Hall, for example. But one of the reasons why Manchester City have got him is because they knew how close Newcastle were. That's interesting. It shows that the work of the recruitment department is carrying on. It shows the level of target that they're going for. The first few minutes of his debut at the weekend.
Yeah, could have went better, couldn't it?
Could have gone a bit better. He had a tough start, but definitely improved against Chelsea after those first few minutes. But that is the level of player that Newcastle are looking at. So in one sense, it's very frustrating that he's ended up going somewhere else, because Newcastle don't have the funds to get him right now. But in some ways, it should also make us feel perhaps a little bit more relaxed about what's happening.
And it looked like positive news on the financial front after revenue figures were published for Europe's leading clubs, Jacob.
Yes and no. I sort of took a deep dive into Newcastle's figures and how that situated them in the Premier League. They're now, I'd say, very entrenched in seventh. They're a bit clear of the chasing pack. They're still a long way behind Tottenham and Chelsea, who are fifth and sixth. The results count for Champions League money, so it means that Newcastle have a lot of broadcasting revenue. It's worth thinking about the fact that that's probably not going to be their next season, where next season's accounts will account for this season, where they aren't playing in Europe.
Of course, yeah.
But commercial revenue, which is sort of the deals for sponsorship, the Adidas money, almost doubled. And that sort of thing is more immune to which European competition you're playing in. So I'd expect another rise next season.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite as big as the one we've just seen. What I really took a look at was what needs to happen for the team in seventh to break into the top six. Tottenham's terrible form is a potential good sign, in that if they miss out on Champions League for successive years, that'll fall and fall. However, it's really incumbent on one of the chasing pack, whether it's Newcastle, whether it's Villa, maybe, who knows, in 5 years' time it'll be Bournemouth. But it needs a club to qualify for Europe, ideally the Champions League, for more than two seasons in a row. And no one's done that, I think, almost since Newcastle in the early 2000s.
Fair play. Right then, let's finish off, chaps. Thank you very much for your time, George Corgan.
The next time we speak, we'll either...
I know.
...be at Wembley or we won't.
I know. That is terrifying. Thank you very much, Jacob Whitehead, for your time as well, sir.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed that. Good luck for next week.
Thank you very much. Yes, good luck to all of you out there as well. Enjoy Fulham at the weekend, and then we're back to the Carabao Cup on the Wednesday. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll speak to you very soon. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, take care. Goodbye.
Ball cry there from Trippier, but he's pinched the ball anyway. And Palmer on now, determined to shoot. And no wonder, a moment of brilliance, a flash of genius for Miguel Almiron.
That is a world class finish.
Almiron makes the run. Oh, my goodness gracious me! That was sensational! Even he can't believe it.
The technique to do that is outstanding. What a goal.
Almiron! The sixth Newcastle United goal. And the sixth different scorer. This is brutal.
This is going to be a devastating night for Sheffield United.
Trippier's floated cross to the back post. Murphy heads down. Wilson. Joe Linton. Here's Bruno with a touch. Now Almiron. Oh, yes. He's only gone and done it again. Miguel Almiron.
possession with the one down.
Here goes Almiron. He's away from Longley, and it's 2-0! What a season Miguel Almiron is having! It's his best for goals in the Premier League! And it's not just the quantity of them, it's the quality of them as well! What a run that was, and a finish to match!
Way A, man.
That's it?
Way A, man. Way A, man. Way A, man.
The Athletic FC Podcast Network.